Good morning, 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Sheriff Chip Simmons is here with us. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. Man, we haven't talked in 2 weeks, and it shows. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with, we have breaking news in the, overnight arrest of the Shanna Gully, the woman that you've been looking for in connection with this, front yard stabbing homicide, is that right?
That's pretty much it, yeah. We had gotten a call that an individual had a stab wound, and he was laying in the front yard of his home. Indication was that he had been dropped off about 2 hours earlier by a taxi cab. And then as we're during the course of the investigation, we figured out that Ms. Gully was also living in the residence and that she had been there briefly. So we wanted to talk to her. She was nowhere to be found. But I can report that as I'm on the way over here, they texted me and told me that they have her in custody. She also had a warrant for her for domestic violence, I believe, on the same victim.
Okay.
And so we're going to serve that warrant. I'm not saying we're going to charge her with a homicide, at least not yet.
Okay.
But I will tell you that we did find her. She is at the sheriff's office now being charged with the domestic violence warrant. So we're no longer looking for her, but we are obviously continuing the investigation.
All right, very good. It's good police work. I have been telling people that I was going to ask you a question that I had meant to ask you at least 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, but we had this case with the LD Clarity murder, and this case where these guys go to a party, they see him at the party, they think he's somebody else. They call their buddies. They follow him in their two cars. They open fire, shooting, 50 bullets or something at the two cars, killing him, wounding his friend. And some of these charges have gotten dropped over the years, which I think is weird. Maybe you know more about that than I do. But the one charge against one of the brothers who was in the second car is because he was the driver, not the shooter, is how I understand it. You correct me if I get any of this wrong. But the claim in the trial court and then the appeals court was that he had asked for a lawyer 3 times during hours-long questioning by your deputies. Your deputies failed to provide him his Miranda access to an attorney, got a confession out of him, essentially a felony murder confession, because he said, I don't know why I'm being charged with murder. I just drove the car under the felony murder rule. If you drive the car to a murder, you're charged with murder too. And so now he's going to have to be either retried or, well, we'll see what will happen. Did I get any of my facts wrong? And then how do you respond? It's because I know, you know, the implication is that your deputies didn't do their job. How can your deputies not know Miranda rights? This is a basic thing. So I wanted to give you a chance to respond to all this.
Yeah, that's, we got to go back and talk about the interview itself. So we conducted the interview, and I'll get into a little more detail. I'll paraphrase some of the details in the interview. And then what happens is the state attorney's office, who is present throughout this entire investigation, the state attorney's office, lawyers, right?
So they're watching the interview.
They're aware of what's going on. They're aware of how the interviews go. They're aware of the context. They see the interviews, and many times they're actually there watching from a screen.
Just like you see on TV.
Okay. And then it goes to trial, and then the trial court has what they call a suppression hearing, which means that they decide whether this evidence should be suppressed or should not be suppressed. And so the trial court judge, the circuit judge here, decided, nope, it's legal, it's legitimate. And so the trial goes on, he is convicted, and then ultimately sentenced to life in prison or whatever it was. And then later on, they appeal, and an appeals court says, wait, we don't like that interview. We think it should go back. So let me first say this. If you ask for an attorney, we will close our book. In fact, this is what happened. We closed the book, we walked out of the office, and then this individual re-engaged. So if you re-engage the conversation, then we go back in and re-Mirandize you.
Okay.
We did everything we were supposed to do in that particular situation. And then this happened a couple more times. Maybe I should talk to a lawyer. And then we leave, and he calls us back in. You can call us back in. You can re-engage in a conversation. There has been a lot of case law on that. So what the...
Kind of like if somebody says, I want to remain silent, and then starts talking.
Right, yeah.
They can remain silent, but if they start talking, they start talking.
That is our stance. In fact, that was the state attorney's office stance before they took the case to court. That was the trial court judge, I think it was Judge Simon. That was his stance in the suppression hearing. And now the appeals court, and again, I don't have to agree with them. That's just the way things are. So now the state attorney's office, has the option of appealing that appeals court ruling.
Right.
Or retrying the case.
Right.
So
okay.
They're still working on doing that. That's not up to the sheriff's office. I just wanted to make sure that people understood. We're not out there just, you know, 1970s, you know, cop shows with Sipowicz and this type of thing. We're not doing that. Once he asked for an attorney, and I didn't look at it, so I'm paraphrasing. He asked for an attorney. It's described to me as that the deputy closed the notebook up and walked out the door, and then he knocked on the door and reengaged the conversation. That's why you have a suppression hearing. That's why we won the suppression hearing and in the circuit court. And then again, they went to appeals court and they felt differently. And that's the situation that we live in.
That all makes perfect sense to me. Is there any part of it that you looked at or know about that would warrant discipline, violation of policy, anything that concerns you? And because again, the implication was that, you know, your deputies really, you know, didn't know what their job was and screwed everything up, right? That's kind of the general takeaway the public has is, my God, how come the sheriff's office doesn't know about this? Everybody knows you get a right to an attorney when you ask for one. And based on your account, it seems much more reasonable. And as you said, there's a suppression hearing and I mean, you go through all this process. But even so, is there any part of this that you're uncomfortable with or that they needed retraining? Or is there any part of this that you've addressed internally as a, hey, we ran up against this problem, let's change our policy? I mean, anything like that?
No, I think that when you interview someone, it's an art. I mean, you talk to someone and then you take opportunities to discuss things at length with them, and then you try to catch them in a lie. You do different things, or in many cases, we talk to someone and they explain things and say, okay, we understand that. That makes perfect sense. Maybe you're not the guy, and that happens a lot actually. So I do not think that there is a violation of policy. We do not believe there's a violation of law. And I guess I would disagree that the public thinks that there was. I think people now understand that, judicially speaking, that there are phrases that are used that may not be, not all of us agree with. And, you know, I've seen a lot of these things. And as I understand from the interview itself, if I read Andrew McKay, your rights, and everyone knows what they are now because they watch TV.
Right.
You have the right to remain silent, Andrew, and I walk away and you say, I want to talk to that deputy, that investigator. And then we come back in, we can talk to you. That's been the case for years. That's not a violation. So I would respectfully disagree with the appeals court decision. But we live in a world of laws and we'll follow the rules and where we're at now is that they're going to decide whether to appeal that decision or retry it.
Just a quick follow up is as a civilian who hasn't followed this case all that closely, okay, you and I talk about a lot of these cases when they happen. I'm not the kind of reporter that goes and, you know, follows all of them extensively thereafter. To hear that cases against these alleged murderers have been dropped is frustrating to me because I thought we had the bad guys, we knew what they did, and some of them cases have been dropped.
I think multiple car drive-by killing a civilian.
I mean,
to be served. You have, there were a number of people that we think are involved in it. As you recall, we think that it was a case of mistaken identity. We think they were trying to target someone else.
Right.
There was a conviction, and I cannot speak for the state attorney's office. They had, if I recall correctly, they had dropped some cases for a double jeopardy type of situation that they didn't want to run into a speedy trial type issue. So I can't speak for the state attorney's office. All I can do is speak for the work of the men and women of the sheriff's office, who put days and days and months and months of work into this particular case. This is a case where, a lot of people knew LD. We obviously knew of him, and I'm acquaintance with his family, and I've known him from the coaching ranks for years. But we were working at length on these cases, and all we can do is bring the cases forward, and then the decision to prosecute, when to prosecute, who to prosecute, and how to prosecute is up to the state attorney's office. And then ultimately, in this particular case, the decision on what evidence is suppressed and what evidence is not suppressed is out of my control. I think that to say that the deputies did something wrong is factual. And I think it's a disservice to the hard work and the professionalism of the sheriff's deputies.
Switching gears a little bit, a story that I think caught all of our attention, a former Catholic high student. I guess he's not enrolled right now, but in any case, a Catholic high student had been involved in making school threats against an Iowa school. And this is one of your cases that you at least started this case, right?
Yeah, we take all these school threats, or what is conceived to be or perceived to be a school threat, we take those very serious. In this case, we got word that a student at that was still enrolled at Catholic
High School. Okay, still at the time. Okay, got it.
At the time, had made a threat. Their threat was posted on a northern, I can't remember, Wisconsin, Illinois, wherever.
Iowa, I think.
Iowa, okay. They're all the same to me.
Ouch. Go on, go
all
on.
The Midwestern, Midwestern, yeah, Midwestern I know. States, way up there. But the threat itself was that there was going to be some violence at a school, and we could not discount the fact that that we saw the threat, and it could potentially have meant the school that he's actually going to now, which was Catholic High School. So we ultimately ended up making their arrest, and what they did with him and how they handled him in school, I don't know. I think I heard your story about the threat was made at a school up north, and our perception was the school was made. The threat was made at the school that he was attending.
Gotcha.
And so we took action.
Des Moines, by the way, it was Iowa. Yeah,
Iowa. Yeah.
You've also got some of these like cases that don't really add up. You and I talk about this a lot, where people tell you a story and you're like, So okay, at Oakwood Terrace, the former Truman Arms, you've got this concrete wall. And you got a guy who shows up at a convenience store outside the wall, up the road, I guess, 17-year-old who's been shot, what, in the hand?
Right.
And the story, as I heard it, was he stumbled on an argument, got scared, ran away, didn't even realize he'd been shot until he got to the store, running away from this gunplay. But yeah, that may not quite add up.
Yeah, these are the claims that they make. So when we first heard that, I'm like, wait a minute. There's a big concrete wall, and you're telling me you heard someone arguing. All of a sudden, you realize that your hand has been shot, and so you run to a store. Didn't make a lot of sense. And then when we start to putting things together, it made less and less sense as it moved on. We also got another independent call that someone accidentally shot themselves in the hand. So we got
which seems a lot more plausible.
Shot themselves in the hand, and then this argument across the wall that somehow gets shot. You know, some magic bullet that strikes an individual. So putting two and two together, we figured it didn't happen exactly the way it panned out. And that's just what we get. We get information that there's no way it could be accurate, but we still investigate it fully. And then we look at it at the end of the day, we write, hey, we don't think it happened the way it's claimed to have happened.
Gotcha.
Speaking of that, I got another one.
Oh, another case of a shooting where things are maybe not exactly what they seem like they're saying?
Case of the preposterous, yes. I think that this case, there was a guy that claimed that he was in a hotel with a female.
Not his wife?
I don't know their relationship.
Okay,
They were at a hotel, a local hotel. And he's laying around minding his own business. She's apparently in the hotel room with him. All of a sudden, he falls asleep, and then he wakes up with his foot shot up.
And story as old as time. Happens every day. Randomly shot in the sleep and keeps sleeping. Yeah, or it just happened the other day. Yeah.
And so we're talking to him. Wait a minute. You're sleeping, and you're not talking to anyone. All of a sudden, you wake up, and your foot got a bullet in it. And he said, that's the way it happened. So the lady was there. So what did you hear? Well, all I heard was gunshots. I had no idea. A gunshot. I had no idea what happened. Didn't see anything. I guess she was looking left, and the shooting must have been to the right. So, but anyways.
The phantom sleep foot shooter theory is what we're working on here.
No one knows anything about anything except if someone's, again, got a bullet.
Well, sleep shooting is real, you know? You can sleepwalk, you can sleep talk, you can sleep shoot. Why not, you know?
And then
even if you don't have a gun.
He don't want to press charges on whoever this person is that somehow magically got into the room. And shot off.
Did you find a gun even? Do you know?
No.
Did they bother looking?
Okay. No.
All right.
He went to the hospital, and he's still claiming that he was dreaming.
He's the victim of a sleep shooting. Okay. All right. But as you say, it's what was your word? Preposterous?
It was.
Yeah. Okay. And we've also, we don't have a lot of time, but we've also had a, two self-defense? One where a woman shot a guy in self-defense, and then that's on Castlegate. And then you had another one with a machete attack self-defense, too, shooting?
Yeah, we talk a lot about protecting yourself in Escambia County, and if you think that reasonably you're in danger, you can take action to protect yourself.
Right.
In that case, there was a struggle for a gun, and she was able to get the gun and shot him. I think shot him in the face, actually. And that's the one case. And then the more recent one we had, there was an individual that got into an argument with a woman and attacked her with a machete or came at her with a machete. She ended up firing and shooting him once in the chest. So Neither one of these women will be charged. We feel like it was reasonable for them to believe that their life or someone else's life was in danger. So
okay.
It's been a busy couple of weeks since you were gone.
All right. You got any good stuff coming up you want to promote? I feel like we ought to end on a good note. You know, so got all this death and mayhem.
Protecting yourself to me is a good thing.
Okay. And, all right. Fair enough. That citizen's doing their job.
And being able to defend our deputies on this interview with the Clarity case is, I think, it's a good thing.
Okay. All right. I'll take it.
We do have a Citizens Law Enforcement Academy. We're in week 3 on Thursday. We have over 60 people, right at about 60 people that are attending the class. Very engaged. We were at a training room last week, and now we'll be at
No. Go ahead. I think that you and I haven't talked since I drove.
No, right. Yeah, you're.
And now we're totally out of time. Training. We'll have to wait.
Yeah, we'll have to do it next.
I will tell you, I hate this shuffle steering. Oh, I hate the shuffle. I can't do it. I've tried. I have tried to do it, and I'm telling you, I don't care how good Deputy Cole is. He's taught me, and I hate it.
It's
not comfortable.
It is you.
It is. Yeah. Do you like it?
No. Well, I mean, it's what you're comfortable with, and I think once you get used to it, you're a little bit more comfortable with that sort of steering.
Okay. All right. I get the value, and you know, but okay. We'll have to talk about that next time. I completely forgot that happened since we talked. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for clarifying some of these things. And, man, please tell your folks we appreciate what they do, because we really do.
You bet. Y'all take care.